Republican counsel to the Senate Foreign Relations Committee. He has more than 30 years of experience working on China and national security. He's the co-author of Year of the Rat, How Bill Clinton and Al Gore Compromised U.S. Security for Chinese Cash. Welcome to the show, Mr. Triplett.
Welcome. Thanks. Nice to be here.
I hope you didn't need to take that other phone call.
No. I think it's my sister calling from Austin.
Okay. I wonder if she's listening.
Yeah, she may be listening.
All right. Well, let's see. So how did Bill Clinton compromise U.S. security for Chinese cash?
Well, I think it's kind of a long story, but basically it started really before he was elected the first time. He was in trouble trying to get elected the summer of 1992, and he needed money, so he took a ride in a limousine with James Riotti, and pretty soon after that, a whole cascade of illegal money came into the Clinton campaign and to the DNC.
Okay, now who is James Riotti?
Now James Riotti is a friend of the Chinese military who lives in Indonesia and doesn't seem to want to come to the United States anymore. He had a man working for him named John Huang. And John Huang was the guy who hit the newspapers mostly, as well as Riotti. So Huang later told the FBI that he had walked around to various places in the United States in the 1992 campaign with pockets full of cash. All of this is all illegal, and that given campaign donations all over the place.
Okay, so...
So it started, what I'm trying to say is, it started before the man was even elected the first time. And after that, sorry, got caught in my throat. After that, he appointed John Huang to the Commerce Department and took even more money and so forth and so on. Some interesting high technology deals took place on Clinton's watch.
What's the connection between the Riottis and China?
Well, the Riottis are ethnic Chinese, even though they live in Indonesia. And they have business deals with China in particular. They have business deals with organizations that are connected to the Chinese military intelligence, essentially front groups, shall we say. And so that's kind of where it all got started. And ultimately, some things happened. Some American companies were encouraged to do the wrong kind of business with the Chinese military, and they've been fined and convicted and all that sort of thing. A lot of the satellite business that happened on Clinton's watch assisted the Chinese intercontinental rocket program.
Now, correct me if I'm wrong, because it's been a few years, but I believe I remember that when you and Mr. Timberlake's book, Year of the Rat, came out originally, that was before the story had really broken about the missile technology transfers, correct?
Well, it's sort of in the middle, to be honest. We assisted the New York Times in this program. They did a good job of reporting all of this, and in fact they won a Pulitzer Prize for doing it.
That was Jeff Gertz at the New York Times.
That was Jeff Gertz, that's right. And in fact, at one point the New York Times had a picture of a Chinese general who was in the middle of all of this, and of course we supplied the picture. So it was a case of where we assisted the press in its operation, and then we took it further in the book Year of the Rat. I mean, at the end of the day, one of the American companies that got into this thing over its head lost about $500 million for its taxpayers, shareholders, because it got involved with the Chinese with a satellite that ultimately couldn't go up, and they lost about that much money. Or their insurance companies did. It's not clear which.
Was that Corral, or that was Hughes?
No, that was Hughes. Yeah, they lost about 500 million. I mean, this is just, you know, we got the satellite stopped after it had been, you know, been in the construction for a while. Then also, of course, McDonnell Douglas, which was then bought up by Boeing, it got into trouble because it, McDonnell Douglas had sold a machine tool factory in Annapolis to the Chinese military.
Remind me, please, sir. I think I remember you guys making quite a big deal about that in your book, that they had moved entire plant. And what was so important about that?
Well, the thing that was so important about the plant was that it made everything that sort of we have in the aerospace business. It made the parts for the F-15 fighter. It made parts for the B-1 bomber. It made parts for our number one transport. It made parts for the Minuteman missile program. Here somewhere in my home office, I've got the blueprints for the factory, and it says Minuteman assembly point here. And so they learned how we put all this stuff together, and then they bought all the machinery that we used to make this. And they knew how it was put, you know, how it was assembled, and you know what point what went, you know, tab A went into slot G and all that sort of thing. So they got into trouble. Loral, of course, is famous for getting into trouble. Hughes lost a pile of money, and they all got. You know, I had to pay 5-6 guys. So, all of this happened on Clinton's watch.
Well, when you say they got in trouble, were they getting in trouble on Clinton's watch?
Well, that's right. I mean, they would have gone forward and, frankly, transferred a lot more of this stuff if we hadn't caught them at it. And
so Clinton was letting them get away with it until you guys got.
Well, that's right. I mean, they were essentially what they were going to do. This military satellite that Hughes was, this satellite that had military applications that Hughes was working on was something that was going to go up, and then you know that ultimately the Chinese would have used it, and some transfers had already happened to make the Chinese missile program better. If we hadn't stopped them, that would have been more. So, you know, I wouldn't say that we got them before the horse got out of the barn, but I'd say that some of the horses were still left in the barn when we got the door shut. It wasn't 100%, but we got something. But if we hadn't attacked it, they would have all gone.
Can you please explain to me the process of the waivers? I understand that Warren Christopher at the State Department was trying to stop some of these transfers, and then the authority was transferred to Commerce and this kind of thing. What was going on there?
It was a kind of a shell game in a sense, you know, which P is under the shell kind of thing, and they were transferring it back and forth, and then at some point it was even at the White House. And it's at that point that campaign contributions became part of the process.
Well, and this guy John Wong, who is the fundraiser, the illegal fundraiser that you referred to earlier, he had a job in the Commerce Department overseeing the licenses, right?
Not precisely, but he was close enough that he had a good window on it to see what was going on. I mean, that's the best way to describe it. If you ask me, was his signature at the bottom of the application? The answer is no, but he's close enough to see how things work. But I mean, he was, you know, he's another convicted criminal. The interesting thing about all of this business, all of these people who were a part of the process, almost everybody who was involved, John Huang and Charlie Tree and all of these people, they were either convicted or they fled the country. But on the other hand, recipients, that is the Clintons, nobody ever touched them. And that's essentially thanks to Janet Reno.
Well, and wasn't Janet Reno, I'm trying to understand, it's been a few years, so I'm trying to remember how this story went exactly, but I believe part of it was something to the effect that The Justice Department was investigating Loral and Hughes, and then Clinton went and signed another waiver that basically legalized what they were being investigated for.
That's right. You got it exact. And that's, you know, and again, that's kind of part of it. Then when the story broke, Reno cut a deal with Clinton that she would essentially sit on the investigation and not appoint a special prosecutor for this issue in return for continuing to be Attorney General.
Do we have any evidence of that, or just an inference?
Oh, everybody knew it. It was in Newsweek. I mean, it's not any real secret. No, I mean, as I said, we quoted right out of Newsweek. But I mean, it was everybody in Washington knew that after the '96 election, they cut a deal. It goes back to the whole question of how the Republicans dealt with what we call Clintonism. The people who did the impeachment investigation told me that they had faith in what they were doing with the Monica Lewinsky and Miliband, all of that sort of thing. But they really felt that the Republicans dropped the ball by not going after the Clintons on the ChinaGate issue.
Weren't some of the members of the Judiciary Committee trying to press that issue during the impeachment inquiry?
They were, but they didn't have their act together. They were not well organized. And part of the problem was that they didn't have a very good the investigation of the China's espionage and so forth situation was very, very poor. And what happened was the committees were dependent on the FBI to do the investigations of Chinese espionage and all of and penetration of the government. And as we now know, because of the Leon case and so forth in California, that they weren't competent. They were penetrated themselves, and they didn't have their act together. It's unfortunate, but that's the way it is.
That's one of the most interesting parts of the story to me, is how the investigation ended up unfolding once, if I remember right, it was about halfway through the Monica Lewinsky shenanigans that the story about the China missile technology transfers broke in the New York Times, and then there was a committee investigating in secret the espionage and the missile technology transfers the whole time that the impeachment was going on, right?
Right, that was the Cox Committee. And the Cox Committee did a very fine job, in my opinion. And the interesting thing about all of that was that Congressman Cox from California managed to get a unanimous, and that means all the Democrats and all the Republicans, to sign the report. And this is on the high technology aspect. Now, some people suggest that the reason Cox got the Democrats to agree is because he agreed not to lead into the Clintons. But if you read what was going on, it'd be pretty hard to avoid the Clintons. But again, if I could kind of go back to sort of where we are now. With the Leon case. And then I have a reason for that, because the American Spectator is coming out with a cover story on the Leon case that, to be honest, I wrote. It's coming out this weekend. So when the committees were trying to investigate the whole espionage aspect of things, were dependent on the FBI, and now it turns out the FBI was pretty badly penetrated, if at least that's what they claim. So, you know, in a way, the whole thing was tainted from the beginning.
You're saying they were penetrated. I guess at first I thought you meant they were penetrated by the White House was
no.
Stopping them. You're talking about Chinese intelligence inside our FBI?
Well, as you know, the Leon case, this is woman and these two FBI agents on the West Coast that's been on the news. She just got $2 million bail, I guess, yesterday, in which they had, she was the number one source, they thought, and now it turns out that she seems to have been working both sides of the street at the very least. And that tended to kind of corrupt the whole system, because a lot of the Chinese espionage business that's tied to high technology is comes out of the Los Angeles and San Francisco areas, because, you know, you've got Silicon Valley up there, and in L.A. you've got all the defense contracts. So with her having an affair with both of the top FBI counterintelligence guys in L.A. and San Francisco at the same time, where the damage from that operation, everybody is still in the process of trying to split that one out. But we think it probably went into this area as well, because one of the people that she was having a an affair with was assigned to cover Johnny Chun. And during the time that we were writing the book, Johnny Chun kept talking to Timberlake and saying that he was being set up. And so the theory is that she pushed the FBI to investigate Johnny Chun more and less on another person who was probably more involved.
That's interesting, because I remember thinking at the time, why all the focus on Charlie Tree and Johnny Chung, when really it was James Riotti and John Wong were the real espionage going on here, right?
Right, right. And there were some other guys who were involved in this who were who've slipped the country and so forth and so on, who are arguably more of a problem. But the whole Clinton business was corrupt to the core. And again, sort of to beat this dead horse to complete pulp, I think the Republicans would have served the country better if they could have gotten themselves organized to concentrate on the Chinese side rather than on the Monica Lewinsky sex side. Although now, of course, we find that sex is also on the Chinese side, as a practical matter. But the problem is,
sir, weren't the Republicans just covering for him because George Bush and Ronald Reagan had started this licensing of this technology in the first place? I mean, isn't that why Henry Hyde made sure that all they focused on was Lewinsky and not China?
No, I don't think so. I know Mr. Hyde pretty well, and I think if he could have felt confident that he could have made a better case than the Chinese side, he would have done it. It is a fact that, the licensing stuff begins with Carter in at the very end of the year, so end of his term. So Carter, and it's a kind of progressive scale in which licensing of things for China went forward. During the Reagan years, there was a kind of strange euphoria about China, in which we actually sold them weapons, and then after the Tiananmen massacre, everybody realized that was a bad idea, so they stopped doing that, at least. There was a lot of stupidity out there. In the Clinton case, I mean, essentially you're looking at traditional graft and corruption. Bernie Schwartz of Loral starts writing checks, and fun things happen at the White House.
Actually, one of the news clips I just played before the interview started, they referred to Bernie Schwartz and Loral as the biggest donors to the Democrats in 96, and I was under the impression that the communist government of China was the single biggest donor to the Democratic
Party. Well, we're talking legal versus illegal.
Okay, so China is still the number one donor, and then Loral, the missile technology company, was number two.
We suspect so, because, we know the money that we found, okay? We also suspect that there was a lot more money out there that we didn't find. It was just you know, just one of those things.
Well, the local paper likes to say, oh, the Chinese contributed about approximately $100,000. And
oh,
I thought, wasn't it much, much more than that?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Millions. Surely. And it, and also the question in politics, it's not only a question of how much, but it's also a question of when. If you get a kind of a critical time frame, it doesn't, you know, you don't have to contribute quite as much. For example, to go back to the limousine ride that Bill Clinton took with James Riotti in August of 92. I mean, the guy was running out of money, and that was a critical time. And, yeah, there were probably people who gave more money earlier or later or whatever, but if it's you're right on the knife point, if you're with me, then, you know, then you're then it has a bigger impact. And again, we have the difficulty that, even though I think Timberlake and I certainly did the best job of anybody, to be not quite modest about it, in uncovering this, the one thing we knew is we didn't get it all. I mean, that's the first thing I could tell you, that there's a lot more out there that we never got. I mean, it was so blatant. I mean, the head of Chinese military intelligence in the summer of 96 said to Johnny Chung, we like your president, meaning Clinton, and we want him reelected, and here's $300,000 in illegal campaign contributions to make it happen. Now, that's just one instance on one night and one guy. And so we're sure that there was more.
Wasn't the Riotti's bank tied into Madison Guarantee Savings and Loan back in Arkansas?
I think it was, yeah, because Riotti passed through the Arkansas business, as you know, early on in the game. So, I mean, from that standpoint, at least, it goes back quite a distance. But it's sort of the difference between sort of a low boil, if you know what I mean, and then really turning up the tap. I mean, it really turns up the tap in 92. And then it goes on in 96 and so forth and so on.
When you're talking about the Cox Committee investigating during the impeachment, then after the impeachment was over and the Cox Committee issued their report, which you said he struck a deal where he had to cut out all the bad stuff about
Clinton. Well, that's the rumor. I mean, that's the rumor, yeah.
Well, and I have the Cox Committee report, and it doesn't talk about Clinton signing waivers or transferring the jurisdiction to the Commerce
right.
Department or anything. The whole focus is on Chinese trying to spy on us, not us
right.
cooperating with them. And I just and then after that they went and blamed it all on one poor Taiwanese guy at Los Alamos, right?
Well, you know, and that thing there with regard to Dr. Lee, that's really murky. I'm not sure what we'll ever find out about what he was up to and whether he was clean or not. That's totally murky. But if, again, if you have the Cox report at the end, at the back of it, you will see that there's very severe criticism of the Chinese and the China analysts at the CIA. Now, at some point, you know, I think it may have been in 98, the situation got so bad that a couple of those analysts had to testify before a grand jury. I believe it was in Seattle. So, I mean, you have this sort of unique situation in the Clinton administration where, you know, the First Lady of the United States has to testify before a grand jury. The CIA analysts who are supposed to tell us what is going on or be the first line of defense against a country that's pointing ballistic missiles at us, those people have to testify before a grand jury. And all sorts of people who were associated with Chinese military intelligence, directly or indirectly, through cutouts, these people are all convicted. So, you know, for making illegal campaign contributions to Clinton. So it becomes almost just a mess. And I mean, that's why, while this isn't Chinese, certainly, when you get into the whole way they went out of office, you know, granting pardons to drug dealers and, you know, sneaking the White House furniture under their coats or whatever it is they did, it's all part of the same sort of thing. And yet, and then she may, of course, become president of the United States, as we all know. It's conceivably possible.
Well, and on the Wen Hui thing, I just want to finish that up real quick. They dropped 98 charges against him, and he pled guilty to accidentally leaving files on a computer that wasn't even connected to anything anyway, right? I mean, they had him in solitary confinement for 9 months, and then they let him go, dropped the 99 charges of espionage against him.
I'll be honest with you. When I look at the Wen Hui case, it's totally murky. I mean, the only thing that I think that everybody who's looked at it agrees is that the FBI made a total colossal, horrible mess of it. And whether it's a mess from the standpoint of harassing an innocent guy, or more or less innocent guy, or whether, in fact, he was up to other things and they couldn't prove it, that nobody really knows. I mean, and unfortunately, that goes along with the whole problem of having to deal of how the FBI deals with Chinese espionage, namely not very well, how the CIA analysts deal with the Chinese not very well. So it's all part of the same problem. So either Dr. Lee was dreadfully mistreated, or on the other hand, the FBI lost its case. It's hard to say.
In your second book that you wrote with Mr. Timberlake, Red Dragon Rising, you guys really make the case that China is an incredibly serious threat to the United States. Is that right?
Well, there's no doubt about that. I mean, yeah, I think from the standpoint of, you just start with ballistic missiles. So you've got a Chinese general who is the head of Chinese military intelligence who threatened to incinerate Los Angeles.
I was going to ask you about that. Pardon me for interrupting you. But,
yeah, sure.
I don't know if you have your timeline out in front of you, but I wanted to know if you know the proximity of time between that statement that, maybe you'd like a mushroom cloud over L.A., when he said that, how long after that did Clinton sign another waiver transfer missile technology?
Well, he was signing waivers all the way along. So it's a question of, are you asking me when he signed the Hughes waiver or when he signed
I'm asking basically, when that Chinese general talked about nuking Los Angeles, did that stop Clinton or did that
all in the same time frame.
All in the same time frame.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm sorry. Please continue with that.
As I said, all of these waivers, so that it's not just one waiver, there's a whole series of these things. And again, until we, blew the whistle on it, got it stopped. So the depth of the corruption here is kind of bottomless. And as I said, it's sort of all, so you wouldn't be surprised if in the middle of this game that he's, for campaign contributions, he is making these waivers that ultimately help the Chinese missile program. So you're not surprised at the end of the game, as he goes out the door, he signs a get out of jail free card to a drug dealer. So, or a series of them. So it's all part of the same, corruption box. I mean, anything goes with those people.
Well, I'm sorry, but to me that is particularly shocking that a general from a communist military dictatorship could be talking about firing a nuclear weapon at an American city, and then that the President of the United States would continue to sign waivers transferring missile technology?
It was worse than that. The same general, after that, and after it appeared in the newspaper, during the Clinton years, came to Washington, and he would have, the Chinese embassy would have a big dinner for him, and all the Clinton officials would go to the dinner and yuck it up. Oh, yeah, this happened.
And if you complain about Bill Clinton to anyone, people will say, oh, what, because of Monica Lewinsky?
Well, again, you know...
It's the perfect cover story. It really is. That the worst trouble he ever got in was the stain on the dress.
Right. And of course, you know, other than, you know, embarrassing and humiliating the United States around the world, from the standpoint of the Clinton defenders, they always said, well, it didn't affect policy. Well, I can't tell you that it didn't affect policy, but certainly what was affecting policy was all the Chinese stuff. And they were signing these waivers, and the technology was transferred to make the Chinese missiles more accurate and more reliable. So you have the situation that before the American companies fixed the rockets, they had a series of failures. After they told them how to stop, you know, how to fix the rockets, they didn't have any more failures. And it's the same kind of a rocket that's pointed at Los Angeles, Boston, whatever.
Do we know how many missiles they have pointed at us?
Well, the standard story is something in the order of 25 or so. But they're about to... but, of course, each one of them has MIRVs. So you're looking at, you know... Quite a few more than that, but that.
Please explain for people who don't understand what is MIRV.
Okay, more than one warhead on one rocket. So you shoot, instead of shooting one rocket with one bang, you get five bangs, get bang 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 bang, in five different places. So you shoot one from China at Texas, and you would get hypothetically Austin, San Antonio, Dallas, Fort Worth, and Houston. So, with one rocket. So, if you say you've got something in the order of 25 rockets aimed at the United States, that doesn't mean that you've only got, you know, five shots. But the other thing is, the Chinese go in for very large explosions, and city busters is what they're called, as opposed to trying to shoot it at a military target.
And is it true that their missiles were incapable of crossing the Pacific Ocean before this technology was transferred?
I wouldn't say they couldn't cross the Pacific Ocean, but they were very unreliable. And they had a lot of explosions on the launch pad and things going off track and all that kind of thing. In addition to the sheer power to make the thing work, you want to have some confidence that the thing will do it. 9 times out of 10, 99 times out of 100. What the Americans companies are alleged to have done for the Chinese, and for which they pled guilty and paid money, is that they made them reliable. Now, my view, sitting over here on the East Coast, who travels to Austin pretty frequently, is that I don't want them reliable. I would like them to blow up on the launch pad, wouldn't you?
I would very much prefer they blow up on the launch pad, sir.
Right. I mean, and so, you know, so you look at all of this thing that went on, and you have a direct threat against the basic security of the United States. Many years ago, I went to Hiroshima and got the tour and walked around and so forth and so on. Well, Hiroshima size bomb, you're looking at maybe 10% of the size of the kind of thing the Chinese would throw at the United States. I mean, sort of 10 times. I mean, a thing of that nature was that... So landed on the Bat Bridge at you know, across the town lake in Austin, well, you get, you know, clear south, not quite to Buda, but, you know, down there, and then you get up to, what, Round Rock?
Round Rock, yeah.
Round Rock.
That's a big explosion. What are we talking about, a couple of hundred megatons?
Well, I mean, yeah, something in that area. I mean, you know, you just... the time you have blast and fallout. So, I mean, it would take out the whole metropolitan area.
So where do you stand on overall China policy then? Are you for a confrontational approach or...
Well, I think basically we have to protect American interests, that's for sure. And protecting American interests makes... You start by making certain that we do not help them get better militarily. I mean, that before you start into on the confrontation thing, I think that's the first thing that you have to start with. And we're making some progress there. Perhaps not as 100% as I would like, but certainly we're making some progress. A lot of things that were going on in the Clinton era just stopped when Bush took over. So that at least we have something going.
Well, in your book, you guys make a big deal, quite a big deal, about the supercomputers that were transferred to the Chinese by Bill Clinton. And hasn't George Bush continued to sell even better and even more supercomputers to them?
I don't think so. I think at least some of the stuff they're doing, they're tracking where this stuff is, and they don't just simply say, you know, dump it off the end of the loading dock.
Okay, well, I thought I had heard something about that, and I went ahead and typed in Bush and supercomputers in my Google engine before I came here today.
Uh-huh.
And I found about, oh, I don't know, 200-something articles about Bush continuing to sell supercomputers to China. The first one was the LA Times from January the 3rd, 2002, and that there are more powerful supercomputers, and that he sold even more than Clinton ever did.
Well, that's certainly bad news. I did not know. What I knew was that they had not only sold what was the supercomputer at the time, but they also didn't track where it went. And the same, of course, was true for the famous machine tool case from Indianapolis. Or Columbus, Ohio. Pardon. Columbus, Ohio. So if they're selling supercomputers to the Chinese, I'm not happy about it, but I hope at least that they're tracking. Because that's what the Clintons didn't do. I mean, they would just send something off and it would go anywhere.
Okay, well, what's the difference between a legitimate use for a supercomputer and an illegitimate use for a supercomputer?
Well, I think a supercomputer, you know, you can use a thing like that for weather forecasting for agriculture. Okay. But if, in fact, they're using it to make biological weapons, then that's something else. But if they have some effort to control where it's going, so-called end-user certificates and that sort of thing, I'm not as happy as I would like to be, but on the other hand, it's better than it was.
Are you going to look into this further and see whether
Sure.
they're tracking these computers?
Oh, yeah, we will.
I greatly look forward to hearing your results there. Because, to be honest, I mean, I read on your book here that you serve for the Republicans in the Senate and that kind of thing, and I just wonder whether you'll really be as hard on George Bush as you were on Bill Clinton, assuming he deserves it.
A lot of the things that Bush has been doing with regard to the Chinese are particularly useful, I think, in some ways. I mean, for example, the first thing he did in the spring of 2001 was lay down a marker on Taiwan. And that, I think, is a thing, certainly, that Clinton would never have done. And he's offered to sell Taiwan the kind of early warning radar and so forth that it needs that the Clintons would never have done. So we're making progress in that area. Am I 100% content? No.
Let's talk about proliferation. The North Koreans have 3-stage rockets now. Did they get theirs from China, who got theirs from us?
Well, it's an interesting thing. Back in 1994, a guy at the Defense Intelligence Agency apparently got angry and dumped into the Wall Street Journal what he had found, and allegedly the North Koreans had rolled out a missile which became their long-range missile, and it was flat, if you will, horizontal on a kind of dolly, and so we had a satellite picture of it, and the guy looked at it and it looked familiar, and so he took the an older satellite photograph he had of a Chinese missile and laid one on top of the other and it kind of matched. And so it's not been much of a secret for a long time that the Chinese have been assisting the North Korean missile program. They have a long history of close cooperation, and the Chinese like to use the North Koreans as a kind of cover, you know, cut out, if you will.
Sort of to get the North Koreans to be provocative on their behalf, that kind of thing.
Yeah, and also there's personal money involved in it. Beijing is pretty corrupt too, and some of the families at the top make personal money into Swiss bank accounts and this stuff. So my guess is if we had perfect intelligence, we'd probably find some of the stupid things that Hughes and Loral did, went through the system to the Chinese, to the North Koreans, and possibly to the Iranians as well. At least that seems to be the current theory, yeah, at least.
Is there any truth to the accusation that the arms race in India and Pakistan is in any way related to the increase in China's capability?
Well, I mean, there would be no arms race on the Pakistani side at all if it were not for the Chinese. And the Chinese gave Pakistan the complete, what we call, strategic weapon cycle. That is, they gave them the fissile material, that's the, you know, radioactive material, and then the triggering mechanism to make it go bang, and the delivery system, namely the missile. So all
and
of
the
that,
delivery systems.
And the delivery system. That's 1, 2, 3.
Okay, so let me make a crazy assertion, and you stop me when I go off the story here.
Sure.
Bill Clinton is responsible for the proliferation of nuclear missiles in North Korea, China, Iran, and Pakistan. And indirectly, probably India, too.
Not to India. The Indian stuff is indigenous, but...
response to Pakistan.
Well, that makes sense. Okay, I understand. I think you can say had a hand in and may ultimately have made critical contributions to make it work. It's like a system. You know, you have to have sort of if you have a line of sort of 20 things, if number 17 doesn't work, then the whole thing fails. What Clinton and his sort of generalized corruption did was to make sure the whole string worked. And I think you could say that probably there was a pass through of this kind of technology know-how that went from A to B to C to Z. And do we have perfect intelligence on it? No, but I think it's probably if we did, the answer would be yes. I mean, that's kind of a long way of saying mostly yes.
Okay, well, I was hoping you were going to say, no, 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 you're being silly, but I guess not.
Well, I mean, Timberlake and I, you know, lie awake at night staring at the ceiling worrying about stuff like this. And, of course, the thing they're now worried about, which... Of course, Iran's in the paper, but the thing they're now worried about is Libya. That's not in the paper yet, but it will be.
That Libya's getting technology from who?
Chinese, North Koreans, you know, that sort of way.
Are you sure that's not just propaganda against the last of the rogue states to set up for war against them, too?
I don't think so.
So you have the intelligence as
well? Well, I mean, there's some of it is in Red Dragon, right? Yeah.
Sorry, it's been a couple years since I read it.
Yeah, trust me, it is. It's in there. But, you know, again, there's a question of, to make this topical, what happens if she becomes president of the United States? I'm going to ask you this. I mean, do you think they've learned anything? Do you think that they thought, oh, gee, we made a lot of mistakes, we're never going to do that again?
No, I think they've learned that we love it, and that we can't wait to live in Soviet America, and that she's going to do everything she can to grant us our wish.
Well, she's making progress. That's for sure.
Okay, I want to say something crazy again. I always thought it was fun about the Clinton scandals, how they all tied together, how the Lippo Bank, owned by the Chinese Communist government, or half-owned, was partners in the Madison Guarantee Savings and Loan, how Bill Clinton would meet his drug-dealing partners at Charlie Tree's Chinese restaurant in Little Rock, how John Wong and James Riotti were sitting on the couch next to him watching Waco burn on the big
right.
screen TV.
Right.
It's all connected together. It's like this guy, he can't even keep his conspiracies apart from each other.
I mean, this was an old African-American spiritual, you know, the leg bone is connected to the thigh bone and et cetera. Well, this is essentially what you have in the way of corruption. And it's not only, you know, all of these things, you know, specifically, like, you know, the Riottis watching the American children being burned to death in Waco. You ultimately, as I said, get to the last day in which Clinton's in office and he pardons a bunch of drug dealers.
Now, which drug dealers are we talking about? You've said that a few times now.
You're talking about, you know, Mark Rich and all those people.
Right, we're not talking about the guy that sells bags on the corner. We're talking about international
drug traffickers.
No, the big guys.
Yeah, bags in the corner. He can't contribute enough. But I mean, you're talking about Mark Rich, and you know, and that whole disaster, and the whole question of, you know, how much of the White House furniture and china and silverware, or whatever, that they walked out with a moving van that they had to return. I mean, you know. You get to the point where they don't think that any of the regular rules apply to normal people apply to them.
So if I had magical powers and I could make you a prosecutor and give you a grand jury, how long would it take you to secure an indictment against Bill Clinton on these charges?
Oh, the problem, I mean, could you make a case? Wouldn't be hard. The problem, of course, is that there are enough people in America who want to be protective of the Clintons. Could you get an indictment? I don't know. But could you make a case? I think we did for a normal prosecution. But, again, the Republicans weren't very competent, and Janet Reno wanted to make sure it didn't happen. So it didn't happen.
Well, now that Attorney General Ashcroft is up there in the Bush administration, I don't see anything changing. How come he's not appointing an independent prosecutor?
I think, and we all talked about exactly this question, we think that a lot of it has to do with a conscious decision that the Bush administration made when it went into office. Essentially, they're going to pretend like the Clintons didn't exist, and that there was no break between him and his father. I mean, they talk about, you know, Bush 41 versus Bush 43 and all that sort of thing, and try to ignore the existence of the Clintons like a bad dream that's never going to come back.
Yeah, but we're supposed to have a rule of law where I don't care what the president wants to pretend. This guy was the president for 8 years, and if there's crimes that were committed that haven't been prosecuted, it's his job to prosecute them.
I agree with you. If it were my decision, I would have gone after them on day one. But that was the decision they made. I don't think it was the correct one. I think it was a mistake because it's quite clear she's coming back.
Have you communicated your concerns to the Bush administration? I mean, you're pretty tied in.
Well, I mean, you know, sure, I've talked to friends, but, you know, they say particularly after 9/11, they just don't, you know, they don't consider it that important. I mean, I think, frankly, that she's probably going to run for vice president in 2004. That's my guess. And president, in, if she doesn't win, become president in 2008. I mean, if you look at what she's doing and how she got herself onto the Senate Armed Services Committee so people could say she had some experience with national security, it's quite clear she's doing step to become president of the United States.
It's funny, too. You haven't said her name yet. It's just she, the fascist in the pink dress.
Right. I mean, it's slow. Nobody, I mean, nobody needs to say otherwise. I mean, she dominates the Democratic Party. I mean, on the, if you go to the website for the Washington Post today, there's a big story talking about how the Clintons not only dominate the Democratic Party still, I mean, it gets even more. So I think...
Well, and they're already bad-mouthing the Democrats who are running. They seems they prefer that Bush Jr. win again so that she can run unopposed, basically, in 2008.
Yeah, I think, I mean, the Republicans will have decent candidates in 2008. I don't know whether Mr. Cheney's health would be up to it, but certainly he would be considered a factor of some kind. Senator Frist of Tennessee is well thought of. And, you know, we're not short of candidates. The Democrats right now are struggling. But, I mean, when they talk among themselves, they certainly blame the Clintons for dominating the news and knocking them off the air. I mean, Bill Clinton goes to some college and gives us a speech saying that he thinks the 22nd Amendment, which keeps him from being president again, should be repealed or modified so he can run again. Well, that just takes the whole press go boom, and nobody pays attention to the legitimate Democrats who are running for office. So, as I said, the Bush administration made the decision to essentially pretend that the Clintons' era never existed. I think that's a mistake, but there's not much I can do about it.
Well, except you could write another book.
Yeah, well, I might write a book about North Korea. That's a subject that's significant these days.
All right, and with that, we're going to have to let you go. We're about out of time.
Okay.
Thank you so much for joining us on the air today. This has been an interview with William C. Triplett II, co-author of Year of the Rat, How Bill Clinton and Al Gore Compromised U.S. Security for Chinese Cash, and he also, with Edward Timberlake, co-wrote Red Dragon Rising. Thank you so much for joining us on the air today, sir.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
All right.
So when somebody says I was an embarrassment to the country, I say it depends on what the meaning of was is, jerk. You owe me $200,000.